The reading this morning is from Proverbs chapter 9. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out its seven pillars. She has prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her maids, and she calls from the highest point of the city. Let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. Come eat my food and drink the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of understanding. Whoever corrects a mocker invites insult. Whoever rebukes a wicked man incurs abuse. Do not rebuke a mocker, or he will hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Instruct a wise man, and he will be wiser still. Teach a righteous man, and he will add to his learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For through me your days will be many, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you are a mocker, you alone will suffer. The woman, folly, is loud. She is undisciplined and without knowledge. She sits at the door of her house on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by, who go straight on their way. Let all who are simple come in here, she says to those who lack judgment. Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious. But little do they know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of the grave.
Well, our series started by thinking about a young person about to head out into the world. And today I want us to imagine them having landed at university Freshers Week. At Lancaster University, there is a pathway that leads all the way through the campus. And during Freshers Week, businesses and societies and groups will stand there handing out flyers and invitations. And I want you to imagine a young person, 18-year-olds, being given two flyers. The first is from an older lady. She no longer has youth on her side. Her tattered clothes are covered in flour from the morning's baking. Her knees are covered in soil from the garden. And what he hopes is sawdust is in her hair. And as he passes her by, in a rather urgent way, she invites folks into her home for a meal with a message. He walks on down and receives a second invitation from a younger lady, his own age, a student, who's dressed in fewer clothes than her father would have liked, and as he passes by, she provocatively slips her invitation into his shirt pocket. And as she does so, she leans in and whispers in his ear, "Stolen water is sweet, and food eaten in secret is delicious." It's an invite to an all-night party at her house. See, today we've come to the end of the first chunk of Proverbs, the first nine chapters of the book. We've had a little taste of the promise of wisdom. She's more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can even compare with her. And we've been warned of the dangers of folly. Many are the victims she's brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. And today that rhetoric reaches its roaring crescendo, with Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly both handing out invitations head to head against each other. It's one final call to listen to wisdom, to grab our eyes, to grab our attention, and to make sure that we read on. So let's look closely at these two invitations. And let's look firstly at the invitation to Lady Wisdom's banquet. Let's start in verse 1. Wisdom has built her house. She's set up its seven pillars. She's prepared her meat and mixed her wine. She's also set her table. I'm sure many of us have had one of those frantic moments preparing a meal ready for guests to arrive, making sure everything's at the right temperature just as that doorbell goes. But I doubt we've put in as much energy and effort as Lady Wisdom. She has custom-built a house just to have you over. It's a large and spacious house with seven pillars, built to perfect specifications. And what a feast she offers! She offers sizzling steaks, rich and fruity wine, mouth-watering to the taste. No expense has been spared. Her preparations have been lavish and extensive on a scale similar to that which we see in the feast in Beauty and the Beast. Knives and forks and plates are just delighted. They're spinning. The bell is there and they are there to serve them. But really, what this is a picture of is of the next 22 chapters of Proverbs. It is a feast of wisdom, a banquet of understanding, refreshment that brings to life, and you're invited to dine in verse 3. She sent out her servants and she calls from the highest point of the city, "Be our guest, be our guest, put our service to the test." Those servants who she's sent out, we've met before, they're those who she's sent out to teach us wisdom. It's been our father, our mother, our grandparents, a teacher calling to their young students, "Come, listen to wisdom. The feast is now ready. Come and dine with us. Read and enjoy." The invitation is lavish and extensive. The invitation is open and free. Verse 4, "Let all those who are simple come to my house. To those who have no sense, she says, come, eat my food and drink the wine that I have mixed." It's one of those remarkable things that we see throughout the Bible, that God's invitation is always, come, eat and drink. In Isaiah 55, it's put this way, "Come, all those who are thirsty, come to the waters, and you who have no money, come, buy and eat, come, buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why spend money on what is not bread and your labour on what does not satisfy? Listen to me and eat what is good and you will delight in the richest of fare." And that gets bigger and bigger in the Gospels. In Matthew 22, the king sends out his servants saying, "I prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fatted cattle have been slaughtered and everything is ready. Come to the wedding banquet." Or even it's Jesus as he stands up in the festival in John and says in a loud voice, "Let anyone who is thirsty come and drink. Come to me and drink." When we think about God, one of the pictures we might rightly use is the picture of a gracious host. And that is an important point. God is not stingy. He never offers second best or just what he had at the back of his cupboards. He is a lavish host and he promises a sumptuous feast. God is not determined to keep people out of heaven. He's determined to get in as many people as will simply come. The invitation isn't exclusive. It's not just for the few, not just for rich or intelligent or people from a certain background. It is scandalously inclusive, open to all and open today. We needn't wait for a loud voice from heaven to call us. This invitation has been held out to you for many, many years. Now you might be thinking, well, where is the catch? There's no such thing as a free meal. And there is a catch of sorts. In verse 6 it says, "Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of insight." The catch is not a cost, but it's a call to leave behind your simple ways. What it's saying is simply that you can't have it both ways. You can't walk both paths at once. Coming to this party will mean leaving behind your foolish ways and foolish thinking and ways of living. We cannot enter Lady Wisdom's house and enjoy her feast without allowing her to change our life. And at times that pathway can be a hard pathway. In verse 8 it says, "Rebuke the wise and they'll love you. Instruct the wise and they'll be wiser still. Teach the righteous and they will add to their learning." Wisdom will often rebuke and instruct and teach. It is a pathway of loving correction. And to walk that pathway, it takes humility. The wise person is not the perfect person. The wise person is the teachable person and remains teachable throughout the course of their life. And that teaching begins by acknowledging a higher authority than their own. Verse 10, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." To walk in the way of insight means to walk attentively to God, to stay on the path with Him, to listen to what He has to say to us in His word, the Bible, even when that is a hard word. It's an interesting question. What does it mean to walk along a pathway with someone? If I was to ring you up this week and to say, let's go out for a walk together, you go for a walk down in London and I'll head up to the Scottish Highlands and we'll go for a walk. It's not really walking on the same pathway, is it? It's not walking together. Just so, if God tells us to do one thing, and we say, well, no, God, I'm going to do this thing over here. It means walking on the same path, not turning to the right or to the left, imitating God in all that we do and desire. And it'll mean trusting God for the destination that path is going as well. It'll mean that we have to be willing to walk at God's pace. Isn't it interesting that many times we're in a hurry to get ahead of God, to run down the pathway and say, I want to get here now. Or perhaps the opposite. Sometimes we'll drag our heels behind God. We know what God wants us to do, but we'll find every reason not to do it. Walking in the way of insight means walking along His path and at His pace. The fear of the Lord will mean trusting God for every item of His itinerary for our life. And that's the first invitation. But it's worth comparing to the second invitation. As I read it, I want you to try and spot what's similar and what's different about these invitations. Starting at verse 13. "Folly is an unruly woman. She is simple and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house, on a seat at the highest point of the city, calling out to those who pass by, who go straight on their way, 'Let all those who are simple come to my house.' To those who have no sense, she says, 'Stolen water is sweet. Food eaten in secret is delicious.'" Do you see some of the differences there? Wisdom has been toiling away to build her house and prepare her feast. Wisdom has exerted herself to prepare a feast for her guests. But we don't get a hint of that with Lady Folly. She's no such concern goes in. She didn't buy her bread, she stole it. And she doesn't send out servants to call people in. She just sits at the door of her house. What does she care for her guests? After all, this is all about her. But nevertheless, the similarities are even more striking. They advertise from the same point in the city, on a seat at the highest point of the city. That's telling us two things. The high point in a city is simply the place which is going to get the biggest audience. In Kendal, it would be that point outside the town hall where there's a stone, where the town crier used to do all the messages, a place where people would pass by regularly. But really, these days, the high point in our town or in our city probably isn't a stone in the middle of the town. Really, it's people's screens. That's where people's eyes are drawn to today, isn't it? They both stand at the same point. They seek the same audience, even using the same words. "Let all those who are simple come to my house." They both offer hospitality and a meal. And that means that Lady Folly is a persuasive parody, an imitation, really, of Lady Wisdom. She sets herself up as a rival, making the same promises of food and joy and safety and security. But more than that, she offers a quick fix, a quick way to get there. Just as the gospel has gone out, there are many false gospels quite happily going around. A salvation through education, security through wealth, joy through debauchery. It's worth knowing that back in the day, seats in those days were very rare and very expensive. A seat really is equivalent to a throne. Everyone else had to make do with the floor or a stool. And so for Lady Folly to seat herself on the highest point in the city, really she's passing herself off as an empress, the one who rules the roost. Folly can seem very persuasive. She can seem very powerful. She can pass herself off as simply just the way things are done. Take one workplace example. It might be a culture of gossip. Everyone does it, and she'll cry out, "This is just the way that things are, the way to build your reputation, the way to get ahead. I can promise you advancement in your career." But she's a bad parody at that. Her promises come to nothing. That bit of gossip that you spread finds its way to the boss, and come time for promotion, you're passed over. All that is to say that we need to have a really strong commitment to the path of wisdom in order to avoid folly. Otherwise, we'll just accidentally bow to her seeming authority. We'll accidentally just listen to her supposed wisdom. It's perhaps a little bit like the myth of Jason and the Argonauts. The Sirens were a group of women that used to stand on cliff tops and sing in a beautiful way to lure ships onto the rocks so that they could plunder their trade. But what Jason does to escape their trap was that he gets Orpheus to play a sweeter tune, to play a better and louder tune than even these sirens, so that their song has been drowned out and they can sail on by without harm. We can't just naively wander through this world thinking that we'll just automatically avoid folly. We need to actively give our ears to something sweeter, to give our ears to the call of wisdom, if we're ever to hope to stay safe. But there's another difference as well to the food she offers. She doesn't offer meat and spiced wine. She offers bread and water, staple foods really, that don't rely on flavour, but instead are spiced with sin. Stolen water is sweet, and food eaten in secret is delicious. It's not the bread that's tasty, but the deception. One commentator, Derek Kidner, has very perceptively said that Eve had to be persuaded that fruit's sweetness would survive the stealing. We've fallen so far to be persuaded that sweetness depends on it. What makes it pleasurable is not the food itself, but the fact that it was stolen. It's like having a midnight feast. It's not the food that's exciting. We have food all the time, don't we? What's exciting is the fact that it's at midnight, that you're getting away with it, and that your parents will never know. As my parents might be watching this video, I hasten to add that I heard that from a friend. But we need to be aware that sin in itself might not be all that tempting after the fact. Often afterwards, we'll think, why on earth did I ever even think about doing that? In Proverbs 20:17, it says, "Bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth will be full of gravel." What gave it that powerful allure? What gave the apple its gleam in the heat of the moment is the temptation to disobey, to play outside of God's rules, to state our own proud independence. That seems to match up with who Lady Folly's guests are. In verses 7 and 8, "Whoever corrects a mocker invites insult. Whoever rebukes the wicked incurs abuse. Do not rebuke mockers, or they will hate you. Her guests are mockers, the scoffers, and the wicked. Two things going on there. First thing, they're not listening. They are proudly independent. They've had ample warning and opportunity to turn, but are so bent on independence and autonomy, self-rule at any cost. When called to leave behind their simple ways and live, they say, well, no, I'd rather do it my way, thank you very much. Hang the consequences, it'll never happen to me. It is the spirit of Invictus. A poem by William Henley, widely quoted, says, it matters not how straight the gate or how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. It's an attitude that defiantly refuses instruction. A personal freedom is their chief value, even at the cost of their own destruction. They would rather die than relinquish one scrap of personal freedom. In one tragic story, a friend of mine was sharing the gospel with a friend and a colleague, and the man had understood it. He could explain the mechanics of the cross. He knew that Jesus had died in order to save him from his sin. He could explain that. But the thing is, tragically, he would not accept it because he wanted to take the consequences for his actions himself. We're back with Frank Sinatra. For what is a man, what has he got? If not himself, then he has naught. Not to say the things he truly feels, and not the words of someone who kneels. The record shows, I took all the blows, and I did it my way. There's something very foolish about that. Verse 12. If you're wise, your wisdom will reward you. If you're a mocker, you alone will suffer. You alone will bear it. Of course, our actions do have a wider impact on those around us, but first and foremost, they explode on us. In an earlier warning in chapter 1, wisdom says, it's no good calling to me when it's too late. Chapter 1, verse 24, because of I have called and you refuse to listen, have stretched out my hand and no one has heeded, because you've ignored all my counsel and would have none of my reproof, I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when terror strikes you. And not only then you will call upon me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but will not find me. Now there's a chilling thought. Lady Wisdom will be stood there laughing and saying, too late, because we refused her invitation. But secondly, not only are they proudly independent, they will spend their time mocking and scoffing at wisdom. They love to tear down what they do not accept. That's perhaps why Lady Wisdom responds with laughter herself, because they themselves mocked her first. But make no mistake, if you try and follow wisdom's pathway, there will be people who will laugh and make a mockery. Because she's socially awkward that she won't join in with us in that gossip. It's because he's a bit odd that he won't come with us to the strip club. It's because they're stuck up that they won't join us in that deception. People will insult, abuse, and hate anyone who tries to correct them. Of course they do. They do it out of insecurity. Deep down they know that what they're doing isn't right, and so they try and mask it to themselves and mask it to others by demeaning anyone who shows them up. Wisdom and folly are more than just two potential opponents. They are two deadly rivals, both fighting for your life to get you to come to their house, but with very different motives. Lady Wisdom wants to give you life. Lady Folly wants to take your life. We can see that here, but nowhere is that clearer than when we see God's wisdom displayed. The wisdom of the cross. See, come with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18, which says, "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God." Paul says that the message of the cross will be received by many as utter folly. They will scoff and say, "You worship a crucified criminal? How utterly bizarre." It will look like folly. The idea that God even exists seems like a stretch to most. But it is, in fact, the power and the wisdom of God that will shame the wisdom of the world. The wisdom of the world that says you can save yourself. It matters not how straight the gate or how charged with punishment the scroll. You are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. The wisdom of the world wants autonomy at any cost. But it's utter folly. Chapter 9, verse 18, Proverbs says, "Little do they know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the deep realms of the dead." But the wisdom of the cross says you can't do it your way. The scroll is charged with punishment. On your own, you have not walked along the path of insight. Often, you've wandered blindly along the pathways that lead to death, and you need a rescue. You need that crucified criminal to save you. It's a feast well prepared. Jesus himself explains the length that he went to prepare that feast. John chapter 6, verse 51, he says, "I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I give for the life of the world." Then in 53, Jesus says to them, "Very truly I tell you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise them up on the last day, for my flesh is real food and my blood is real drink." It is a meal prepared at great cost. An open invitation without qualification. See, Jesus says, he has prepared his meat. He has mixed his wine. He has set his table. He's sent out his servants, and he calls from the high points of the city, "Let all who are simple come to my house." To those who have no sense, he says, "Come, eat my food, drink my wine, drink the wine that I've mixed. Leave your simple ways and live. Come and accept the cross for the first time or the hundredth time. Come, accept it as the power and the wisdom of God, the only way to be safe in this life and the next. Come, leave behind your own foolish independence, the pathways that lead to death." But not everyone wants us to hear that invitation. And we need to be very careful how we listen to voices around us. Be discerning. Be aware that not every voice is going to be wise, and not every voice is going to be out there for our good. We won't go one day without Lady Folly thrusting an invite into our hand, either on TV shows or books or music. Of course, they're teaching us something. Websites and social media very often invite us to dine with Lady Folly. The news, even our friends and family members could be handing out flyers for Lady Folly. And we need to be wise about that. We need to be wise about how we listen to those voices. But really, what this passage asks us is, are you ready to learn? You've reached the end of the introduction now. If you're not willing to humble yourself and get out your exercise book and to start learning, well, you might as well not read on. But if you are humble and willing to learn from Lady Wisdom, then let's really do it. Let's read these Proverbs. Let's commit them to heart and to walk in all of their ways.